Hi, I'm Corinne Lowe. I'm an economist, Wharton professor, and the author of the new book, Having It All: What Data Tells Us About Women's Lives and Getting the Most Out of Yours. I'm going to share with you five key insights from my book. Insight number one, it's not in your head, it's in the data. In 2017, I gave birth to my son, and also a midlife crisis. Things that used to work, like commuting 2.5 hours to my job, just didn't add up anymore. I was constantly stressed, angry, depleted, and most of all, so darn tired all the time. Pumping in the Amtrak bathroom, crying that because of a train delay, I was going to miss my son's bedtime, I wondered, is it just me? I started studying women's time use, and the data told me I was far from alone. What I found is that women are getting squeezed from all sides. As our time in the labor market has gone up, our time in home responsibilities hasn't declined accordingly. This is for two reasons. First, that men's time cooking and cleaning has stayed fixed since the 1970s. And second, that the way we parent has become much more intensive than a generation ago. Mothers in the 80s were not baby wearing and extended breastfeeding and pumping at work and sitting on the floor with their toddlers or the kitchen table with their school-aged kids, driving to a million activities. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and we were out riding bikes. No snacks, no water bottles. We must have been very dehydrated. My point is, the parenting game has changed. Which is great. It has to do with our greater understanding of child development and the increasing returns to human capital in our economy. But we spend almost twice as much time with our kids as mothers a generation ago. And without getting sufficient help from our partners, there just aren't enough hours in the day. And the amount our partners do, by the way, doesn't change when women are the primary breadwinners at home. I find that women who are the breadwinners still do twice as much cooking and cleaning as their lower-earning male partners, winning the bread and baking it too. And if you look at time use over a life cycle, you see women's time use on kids and housework swells to a mountain in their 30s, a period I call the squeeze. And the mirror image of that is our time on leisure and career investments, which goes down like a deep valley. And during that period, time inequality with men is also at its peak. They do less childcare and housework and have more hours for work and leisure. If you feel exhausted and depleted and you're wondering why you can't do it all, it's because it actually does not add up, and we need to figure out a different way forward. Insight number two, your goal in life is utility, not career success. While we have been told that the answer to women falling behind at work is to lean in, my research shows that the problems facing women are structural. We're trying to be a Frankenstein of a super career woman at the office and an Instagram mom at home. Making our careers our only goal in life and chasing the outcomes that our male colleagues achieve, with many of them having much more support at home, is authoring our own dissatisfaction. We feel like we're falling behind because we're trying to do more, succeed in a world built by and for men, with less. But economists model human beings as maximizing not career success, not prestige, but their utility function. Utility is kind of like a firm's profit function. It's your personal profit function in life, and it's made up of all the things that bring you joy, meaning, and fulfillment over the course of your lifetime. If you were to look back at your life from 85 years old in a rocking chair on a porch, what would make you say, that was a life well lived? Your career is part of that, but it's not the whole thing. And importantly, your utility function is unique to you because only you know what brings you the deepest feelings of satisfaction. So you can't compare yourself to someone else in terms of accomplishment because of course they've accomplished different things. Their utility function is different. They're maximizing something else. So let me repeat that. Do not compare yourself to someone else who does not have the same utility function as you do. Insight number three, a job is a tool to turn your time into money. Let's talk about where your career does fit into your utility function. It can do something amazing. It converts your time, the natural resource you're endowed with to maximize utility, into money. Your job is an ATM you put time into and get money out of. Ideally, it does this with minimal hassle and maybe some enjoyment, so it potentially adds to your utility rather than taking away. But when I ask people what they would do with their time if money were no object, almost no one says they try to file more reports or climb the corporate ladder higher. That's because we recognize that a job is a means to utility, not an end. If we didn't need the money it gives us, we'd spend most of our time on the things we really enjoy: being with loved ones, hobbies, nature, taking care of ourselves. So we need to think of our careers a little more transactionally than the business books at the airport press us to. Exactly how much money do I need at each phase of my life, and how do I plot a career that gets me that while eating up as little of my precious time as possible? This means thinking hard about the life cycle of your job. Investing lots of time in your 20s can make sense because you're not as squeezed by home responsibilities then, and it can buy you a better time-to-money conversion rate from your job later in life. But you want to make sure you're in a field where you really are working towards the ability to take your foot off the gas at some point, during the squeeze when time is most costly, to use your time making utility directly. Otherwise, as they say, the prize for the pie-eating contest is more pie. Your investment in your career should be proportional to the role money plays in maximizing your utility. That's it. Everything else is just chasing, quote, success at the expense of true happiness. Insight number 4. You can work like a girl and get paid. The advice that we get as women trying to have successful careers is so often to try to pretend we're men. But not only is there no evidence that male traits are actually more productive, there certainly isn't any evidence that women will be rewarded for mimicking them. When I got to Wharton as a brand new assistant professor, a male colleague told me that students really respected you more when you were tough and had to show them who was boss right from the beginning. So I marked my students tardy if they were a minute late. And guess what? They hated it coming from me. A female professor told me that she'd found her students expected her to be really nice, and she had to fulfill their social expectation to get good reviews. Research backs up this anecdote. Women are often penalized for failing to exhibit expected traits like niceness and community-mindedness. And while it's also true that the evidence shows that men are on average more competitive, more risk-loving, tougher negotiators, and greater self-promoters, it does not say that those things lead to more productivity or higher profits. I'm going to say that again. There's no research showing that stereotypically male traits are linked to greater productivity or higher corporate returns. In fact, in the study on competitiveness that showed men were more competitive than women, men were over-competitive. Subjects did a task and had to decide if they wanted to get paid for what they did or enter into a tournament and only get paid if they scored the highest. Of the worst performing men, the men certain to lose the tournament, 60% still chose to enter rather than take the certain payoff. And in my own research on negotiation, I found that male-male pairs were more than twice as likely to fail to reach an agreement and therefore walk away from a negotiation with nothing. I want women to view their gendered traits as their superpowers and find workplaces where they can get ahead by being themselves, not by pretending to be a man and getting punished for it anyway. Insight number 5. We have to radically prioritize what actually contributes to our happiness. When the deck is stacked against us, we can't keep trying to play fair, meeting everyone else's needs and never our own. We have to get ruthless in actually aligning our time with what gives us utility. I have 3 steps for you. 1, renegotiate how time and money gets allocated in your household. 2, throw out your houseplants and make other hard choices. And 3, pay yourself first with leisure time. First, to renegotiate the deal in your household, I want you and your partner to actually track your time. So often men think they're doing about half the household work because they do half of the things they know about. But while they're doing half the school drop-offs, you're the one making sure there are clothes in the right size, lunch is packed, after-school care, and play dates, half of which you do multitasking while at work. If you actually track your time, you might realize there's a lot more inequality than you think and can start reallocating. Once you reallocate the household's joint time budget as much as you can, if there's still inequality in work and leisure time, see if reallocating money to create time can help. Repeat after me, not outsourcing a task is hiring yourself to do it. We rarely do this with male-coded tasks like car repair and plumbing. But somehow for female-coded tasks, we forget that doing something in-house has an opportunity cost of where else you could invest that time. If you're a lawyer who bills at a certain rate, a nurse who could pick up an extra shift, can you really afford that much of your own time for laundry? Second, throw out your houseplants. That's my pithy phrase for decluttering your time of anything that's an obligation rather than a calling. For me, it was wilting houseplants that I didn't have time to take care of and made me feel like a failure. For you, it might be volunteering at your kid's school, making homemade baby food, or planning the office retreat. Understanding the way we're getting squeezed from all sides gives you the freedom to say, nope, this doesn't add up for me right now. And importantly, you can always say yes later when you're in a different and easier chapter of your life. Lastly, pay yourself first with leisure time. We do get some time to ourselves, but it's little time crumbles left over at the end of the day. And by that time, we're so depleted, we end up just zoning out on our phones. If we actually block out time for the things that bring us the most joy and meaning, everything else can claim the scraps. It's like how we can suddenly get a project done in an hour before the deadline. Things expand to fill the available space in our calendars. So block out your leisure time like an important meeting with your boss and let yourself be your own first priority for a change. Thanks so much for listening. I hope these insights help you get a little closer to having it all. Look, it's not going to be perfect, and life really is that hard sometimes. But that doesn't mean it can't also be happy, fulfilled, and meaningful. I call it having it almost.